fact, he admits, ironically, at the beginning of the paper that there have been real government conspiracies, and JFK is one example. So he admits and concedes some ground at the beginning of the paper, and then he talks about how epistemology and philosophy, which is just our theory of knowledge, how that works, and then goes on to say that, you know, the way the government should really combat these things is through flooding the market with fake conspiracy. So that's just a classic, you know, paper. And Sunstein went from being Obama's czar of something to then going to work at the NSA.
Welcome back to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weishaupt. Today we're joined by a very, very special guest. It's Jay Dyer, folks. And he's going to break down the research he's been doing into the secret groups pulling the strings on everything we know. Our reality, our entertainment, our politics, everything. Major themes he's finding in entertainment. We talk about the occult symbolism of Dune because my man's read all the books. He knows where the storyline goes. And we talk about the agenda within science fiction. We even postulate some connections to James Shelby Downard's King Kill 33. And we get Jay's personal take on Downard. We catch up on a lot of bizarre conspiracy theories being exposed by fighter Ryan Garcia. He's been claiming that he was at Bohemian Grove and abused, and there's aliens, and he's got the footage to prove it. But we pivot into the larger conversation, in fact, a quite important conversation on psychological operations and the psyops of conspiracies, because Jay's going to tell us about Cass Sunstein. He's a Harvard lawyer. He was Obama's regulatory czar, and he wrote this journal, this scholarly journal about conspiracy theories, and wait till you hear what Jay has to say about it. You're not going to believe it. You're not going to believe it. I downloaded it myself. I'm going to read it. It's a major agenda reveal about disinformation in the truther world, but we're going to cover so much pop culture along the way. We're going to talk, of course, the movie Dune, Dune 2. Jay went and saw it. Did he get the popcorn bucket? Well, I'm going to ask him. We're going to find out. We're going to talk Dune, the books of Dune, the writer of Dune. We'll talk a little bit of Twin Peaks. Of course, you know we're doing that. We got a great impersonation of Cat Williams. We talk a little bit about Epstein and Diddy and Jamie Kennedy and all kinds of stuff. You don't want to miss out on this one. This is Jay's, I don't even know how many times we've linked up. I've done his show. He's done my show. I've done Jamie Hanshaw's show. I need to get her on here too because she gets into the occult realm of pop culture a lot like I do. So I'll put links in the show notes where you can connect with Jay and Jamie and everything they got going on. Oh, especially the event they got going on Friday, March 15th. You got to get to Los Angeles. He's doing a show with Jamie Kennedy, Jamie Hanshaw. It's 5 hours of a good time. Hollywood conspiracy and comedy. You don't want to miss it. It's on Eventbrite. You can get tickets right now while supplies last. I'll put the link in the show notes. Be sure to check that out while you're listening to this episode. And also, I will put in the show notes the sort of growing list of episodes we've done together. You can check those out if you want more. So without further ado, let's get Jay on stage. Here we go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, he's back. He's the legend. He's the man. I think you're the reigning champ of episode appearances on the now occult symbolism. He's soy facing out, folks. You know he means business. It's Jay Dyer. Doesn't even need an introduction at this point. I feel like it's Jay Dyer. He's gracing us with his presence. We had a sort of situation where we could do a last minute. I got my man for 30 minutes. And I wanted to get you on here and talk to you, but I wanted to catch up with Jay Dyer, the life and times of Jay Dyer working with Alex Jones and Jamie Kennedy and just making big moves. And then I want to talk to you real quickly about Ryan Garcia with these tweets he's been saying stuff. And I know Andrew Tate was on the Twitter Spaces, and I know you've talked to, I think, Tate's brother before. We could talk about Ryan Garcia and a lot of his theories he's pitching. And then I want to talk to you about this big event you got coming up. It's 5 hours. That's insane. But we're going to talk about all that stuff. So anyways, welcome back to the show, Jay Dyer. He's the man, and he's back to talk to us today. How you been, Jay? What's new with you?
Ooh, yeah.
I'm working it.
Do you do those impressions? I like your impressions.
No, I'm not that good at it.
You farm it out. I farmed that out on Fiverr. I found a guy. It's funny. I did one with a guy who did a Leo DiCaprio, but he's Irish, and he kind of fumbled one of the terms. I forget what. He does a really good. It was a really good impersonation, but then a couple of the terms he uses have an Irish accent, and I'm like,
that messed it up.
Dad, this is a totally different thing with Jamie Kennedy. This is a totally different thing.
That's pretty
good. I don't know if you've listened to much Jamie Kennedy, but when you're talking to Jamie Kennedy, that's the vibe. So, yeah, we had a lot of fun. We'll talk about that later. But, I'm happy to catch you up on whatever topics. Been listening to your podcast. You've been killing it. Really appreciate all the good work that you're doing. So, where do you want to start?
I'm following you, Jay Dyer. You know, I feel like right now, as you know, I'm deep into Twin Peaks, a topic we glossed over. Actually, last year I had you on. We talked about your event you did last year with Jamie Kennedy, which you know you're coming back to do again in LA in March. But I think we talked about Twin Peaks last time just a little bit, and I'm deep diving into it. And it's fully consumed me at this point. And you were one of the people back. For people who don't know our history, I've always been following you, man. Like I'm your Cooper and I'm Shadow Cooper, trying to catch up.
You're evil Coop.
I'm evil Coop, and I was filling out the links for the show notes, and I just made a connection because your Twitter is JD007, and I've got a 007 tattoo, right? And it's all. And it's funny because I actually got this tattoo when I was 18, and before I didn't even know who John D was back then. But anyways, all these weird sort of influences, but we started connecting back. I started blogging in 2011 and I stumbled upon your blog, jaysanalysis.com, shortly thereafter.
That long ago? Dang.
Yeah. Yeah. And you'd started blogging, I think in 2009, if I'm not mistaken.
I had a blog in 2007, 8, and then I just revamped everything and started over focusing on Hollywood symbolism and that kind of stuff. So it was around 2011 when the new website was started. I got into the Lynch stuff in high school, but a lot of David Lynch back in the 90s, I didn't get it. So I was just kind of like, this is weird. And like you're saying about your tattoo, like I didn't know anything about tulpas and Tibetan Buddhism and transcendental meditation and metaphysics and theosophy and all the stuff that Lynch loves to go into. So it was actually around that time, the late 2000s, maybe about 2011, 12, where I was like, I'm going to give Twin Peaks another chance, because I wrote an analysis of Lost Highway, which I thought, okay, this actually is about mind control, disassociation, multiple personalities. It ties into Hollywood. Then I went back and redid Mulholland Drive. And I was like, actually, this is about the same type of stuff. It's like girl goes to Hollywood. She ends up kind of dissociating, crazy. Has she been mind controlled? She looks like she's basically a crack hoe now. So, that went in the directions I didn't expect. So then I revisited Twin Peaks. And yeah, I think, the depth that you've gone into more depth than I did on it. I think, but you came to realize the same stuff that like, okay, so he's actually dealing with a lot of the same type of really deep material. I revisited the Lynch Dune as well. I've actually gotten into Dune, the novels, and there's a lot of depth in mind control, espionage, all that kind of stuff going on in the Dune story too, which might be why David Lynch really wanted to do the movie back in the 80s. So yeah, I'm glad to see that you're on the Lynch train, and that's really cool. And, Mark Frost's book came out, which I'm sure you have, a few years ago. And that really vindicated a lot of us in the movie analysis world who were trying to decode this bizarre, two-series TV show at the time. The third one wasn't out yet. Trying to figure out what is all this about. Seems like a secret society, the occult, demons, mind control, aliens coming into the fore. And we were really vindicated with the Mark Frost book, because he's like, this is tying into Crowley, this is tying into Babylon Working, the rituals, all that. So yeah, I'm glad to see that you came to the same conclusions.
Yeah, it's really fascinating, the story. And right now I'm working on, I went episode by episode, and now I'm actually the listeners are, I think they're on season 2, episode 10-ish, and I'm actually working on the season 2 finale right now, because I've recorded all the stuff previous to that, and I'm just kind of releasing it every couple weeks. I release a new episode, and the finale is been quite a project to try to decode. I'm almost done, but I'm finding a lot of, like, to summarize, and I'm finding a lot of the occult ideas of, you know, apocalypse, opposing polarities coming together, some kind of destiny laced in there for Cooper and Laura and Annie even. And it's really mind blowing, but Lynch is a fascinating person, him and Frost. And the it's funny because when I was a teenager, I watched Lost Highway. We talked about this last time, but that was the only Lynch work I'd covered and then, or I'd read or watched. And then last year or the year before, when Dune 1, the remake, came out, I watched it for the first time, obviously, and I had never seen the original Lynch Dune film. And, you know, as you know, part one of the new Dune remake is only sort of the first half of the story of Lynch's 80s Dune movie. And I went back and watched the 80s Dune movie because I was into this Twin Peaks thing at the time, and I thought, oh man, I should watch that. And it blew my mind. I was like, holy crap, this is really good. So and the Dune remake, I thought was fantastic. I haven't seen Dune 2 yet. Oh, I saw that you saw it. You said it was good, right?
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah.
Is it? Okay. All right.
Yeah. And, you know, check it out. Sci-fi, I'm not a huge fan of most sci-fi because it tends to be a lot of propaganda, a lot of trying to get us to buy into a bunch of nonsense. But the weird thing about Herbert's Dune is he's kind of an outlier in that world because it's a future where AI is banned, which is uncommon in sci-fi. And there's no aliens. We're just dealing kind of with the existing, you know, humanity as it is. And there is a kind of a powers, maybe in an evolutionary sense, kind of like X-Men type of stuff, where certain people are kind of developing these powers, which allow them to do things beyond sense data. They call it the weirding way, which actually ties into the occult, because weird women back at, you could go to Shakespeare, right? In Macbeth, you have the three witches that are called the Weird Sisters. W-Y-R-D is the old, I think, old English for a witch, a weird woman. So the weirding way is this kind of occult technique where words give expression to life and death. And so eventually in the story, as Paul becomes a kind of a demigod type of figure, his name itself becomes a killing name, Muad'Dib. So that's just one element. You've got secret society, sisterhood of witches that mind control people. They work like an intelligence agency, the Bene Gesserits, or you might call them the Bene Jesuits, as we've been joking lately, because they operate like spies. And you've got geoengineering, you've got terraforming, you've got genetic manipulation of bloodlines, which have these, you know, potentialities and powers. You got DID, personality disorder, MPD. In, you know, by the time you get into the later stories, I don't know if they're going to eventually make these. They may if they continue to be successful. But Paul's sister, who's this sort of prodigy girl that's born, she actually becomes a kind of Whore of Babylon figure when you read Dune Messiah, which I was surprised. And I could tell, Herbert pulls from a lot of perennialism and traditionalist writers. And I could definitely see he might even be pulling from Whore of Babylon imagery in Dune Messiah when we get to the storyline about Paul's sister, because she actually goes crazy and gets possessed by by the Baron, because the Baron is actually a relative of Paul. So it goes. So
have you read? Are there multiple Dune? I don't know anything about Dune.
There's besides, six parts.
Oh, there's six books.
Yeah.
And then Lynch's Dune film from the 80s. Did that just cover the first book or something? Or
yeah.
Oh, okay. Much. Oh, all right. Yeah. Okay, cool.
So basically, Lynch's Dune ends pretty much where the new Dune 2 ends.
Okay.
And that's
did you get the bucket? Did you get the popcorn bucket? Or
say that again.
Did you get the popcorn bucket or no?
When this was going around, I didn't understand, and I was like, oh, is people think this looks like a some kind of weird sex toy, is that what that is? And I guess so. Like, so I guess
what I hear,
if you have a worm fetish, which is weird because worms are kind of phallic, but it's like if you want to put your thing in a thing, I guess, I mean, it's just I don't know, weird.
Yeah, they call that docking. Do you remember? So I remember back in the day that there was a thing called the ovipositor that was a toy based on the Alien story, the movie. And
oh,
it was
yeah.
The idea was that it was a sexual toy where people would insert it in themselves and inject eggs into themselves. Like, yeah, that was a fetish of some kind. But yeah, anyway, yeah, the science fiction world is weird, and I'm not super into it necessarily, yeah, but I'm down for any kind of the Alien films, and these Dune movies are great. Did you a couple things. Have you researched James Shelby Downard a whole lot? He wrote that King Kill 33 about the mysticism.
Yeah, I have Carnivals of Life and Death. I've read that. I have. Okay. And I've read King Kill. And I've read a lot of Hoffman stuff, and Hoffman was influenced by Downard. The weird thing about Downard, I'm not saying it's not worth looking at, it's just like you get kind of these admissions like, some or much of this may or may not be true. So
that's a good point.
I don't know. It's hard to know. It's interesting from a literary perspective, the stories and tales that he weaves about Southern masonry and all this kind of stuff. But it's hard to know, you know, what's legit and what he's just kind of embellishing.
Yeah. Yeah. He talks about, because I'm revisiting King Kill 33 as part of my Twin Peaks analysis, and I'm finding that a lot of ideas and concepts he presents in there show up in the world of Twin Peaks. And I without a doubt know that Lynch and or Frost are familiar with James Shelby Downard.
Yeah,
I have no doubts in that. But he talks about Macbeth and the Three Witches, and I'm damn near illiterate. I've never even read Shakespeare. I barely know what the Macbeth story is besides the, you know, Wikipedia article. So that's interesting that you found a connection of Dune with Macbeth as well, because that's what James Shelby Downard talks about, yeah, being part of the King Kill ritual. Well,
Herbert was super well-educated, and he was, again, an outlier in terms of sci-fi, because I'm not saying this makes him necessarily, quote, a good person. I mean, the themes of Dune are not Christian, but they're like a form of kind of syncretistic perennialism where it's like, yeah, he's very influenced by Sunni Islam. The book is influenced by Zen philosophy. It's influenced by Catholicism. So it's, in the future, you have this weird blended religion that's like a mix of Islam and Catholicism. And they have this text they call the Orange Catholic Bible, which is sort of the religion of the universe of Dune. And the political people don't believe it. They take it to be just a tool. And the Bene Gesserit witch sisterhood are the missionaries. They're called the Missionaria Protectiva. And for many years, many generations, they've been seeding this myth of the Kwisatz Haderach, or the sort of God being that Paul sort of kind of becomes a contender to be. So there's a lot of borrowing from, you know, ideas of like virgin-ish births outside of the norm. I mean, Paul's not a virgin birth, but they're taking a miraculous sort of birth. He's not supposed to be born. They're only supposed to have women. And the Bene Gesserits would abort male children because they don't want the Kwisatz Haderach to be a male, because they feel like they won't be able to control him. So they kind of want to be the power behind the throne. And anyway, point being is that he's pulling from a lot of these archetypal religious themes in a perennialist sense. So, you know, it makes sense again why that would maybe appeal to Lynch. But I mean, again, like, there's straight up MKUltra, mind control, programmed assassins. I mean, all of that is in the Herbert novels, writing in the 60s. So he had to be privy to some pretty high level, maybe intelligence stuff going on, real conspiracy, so to speak. And Dune Messiah, just a quick note on that, that came out at the time of the JFK assassination. And so Herbert noted that he really wanted to warn people about the dangers of autocracy and the state becoming God. And so a lot of people misunderstand the point of Paul in the first novel. But if you read the second novel, it's more of a cautionary tale, because Paul ends up more of a tragic hero. I'm not going to spoil it, because it's worth, I mean, I like the stories enough that I don't want to spoil it, and I want
okay
to experience it. So I won't tell you what happens, but basically it's a cautionary tale. It's not like a, you know, let's figure out how to create a religion where I can be a God being, you know?
Okay. All right. Yeah. Interested. Yeah. I'm intrigued now. I have a hard time reading fiction, but I'm intrigued enough by the movies that I would like to catch up on the rest of the stories. I know your time is limited, so I want to keep it moving though.
Sure.
Let's switch over to Ryan Garcia. He's this boxer, I think. He's a new name to me. I didn't know who this guy was till yesterday. And he's been from what I understand, he was on Twitter Spaces with Andrew Tate, I think hosting. I'm not sure. I don't even know what they were talking about. I just saw the clip on TikTok where Ryan Garcia, this fighter, starts emotionally talking about how he's been subjected to abuse by, I don't, for lack of a better word, the Illuminati at Bohemian Grove, and sexual abuse, and there's aliens, and he's got proof of all these things. What's your take on this? Are you following that story?
I did look at it because everybody suddenly started talking about it, because anytime Mario Nafal on Twitter talks about something, then most of Twitter ends up talking about it. Unfortunately, I think this is not a very trustworthy person. I don't know anything about this guy beyond, like you said, his recent, what I would call kind of viral marketing. I think people are figuring out that if you rage farm on Twitter or, you know, engage in this kind of like outlandish stuff, it gets you a lot of attention, a lot of eyes. And so it's really nothing to do with what's true or false. And I'm not trying to be mean to the guy. I don't have anything against him at all. But I can, you know, you can sort of pick up on red flags where if I notice that in the rest of that person's timeline, it's all a lot of erratic, kind of unstable, God's talking to me, I'm talking to God, I'm going to talk in tongues right now, blah, 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 jibber, jabber, jibber, jabber, this kind of stuff. And then it's like, oh, it was just at Bohemian Grove and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I don't think that's what I mean, Alex went into Bohemian Grove, he filmed the ritual, so we know that goes on, and maybe there's something that goes on in the background. According to Nixon, we know it's a lot of homoerotic stuff. Could be something worse, but we just don't have evidence of that. And it just seems really implausible. And given the rest of what he's tweeting about, he doesn't come off as a reliable character, but more of an unstable character.
Okay. Yeah. He's I noticed, because I started looking into it, and because I had so many people, you know how it is, everyone's tagging you and, hey, check out this guy. Exactly. What's he doing? You know, I saw that he's got a fight coming up in April, and I thought, well, I mean, come on, strange timing. And again, I'm with you. I don't know the guy. I got nothing against him. And if he's telling the truth, I sure hope that he releases the evidence. And that's always been my beef with a lot of people who've been on the verge of exposing the big thing, who say they've got the receipts and the proof, and they never release it. I'm like, if you really were scared for your life and you really were subjected to these things, I feel like the first time you would talk about these things would be the time you would release all this stuff, so that if you're worried about them coming after you and taking you out, you have sort of undeniable proof that you've already released. You know, I don't know, but I'm not in that position either. But I do think what's interesting is, because this is why I wanted to talk to you about it, because you also have been in this world, this conspiracy world, long enough that you remember sort of 10 years ago versus today and how different things are. And today, these kinds of ideas get more traction. More people are susceptible to believe these things, which I think is good. However, I do get concerned sometimes, because I think a lot of people get... Because I've talked to people in my personal life. In fact, there's people I know personally that when I told them about what I research, you know, back in 2017, I had conversations with them and they were mocking me. Right. It hurt my feelings, you know, because they were my friends. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess I don't talk to people about it a whole lot because of that. And now people look up to me.
QAnon entities going to come down and drink your adrenochrome tonight, Isaac.
Yeah. That and I don't know what to think about it, because some people are starting to open up their minds to these things, but right. Then I think they kind of go too deep into it sometimes, and they start you know, wanting to burn the world down, and I don't like that either, because I think, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know what the right answer is. I don't know what the right level of response is, because some people are more radical than others, and they look at this and they say, dude, they're messing with the kids. Like, we gotta take them out. And I get that sentiment, that sort of warrior sentiment. But then I also think, man, I don't know. Like, what if we're a little bit off on our theories, or maybe we got the wrong guy? You know, Tom Hanks is a classic example.
Yeah,
I've looked into the Tom Hanks thing, and I get why people talk about the guy, but I'm not committed enough to be like, oh no, he's definitely the guy and we need to,
Yeah, I think there's a totally valid concern for the danger of jumping to conclusions in non sequiturs, right, without actual solid proof. And one thing Alex has pointed out that I agree with for a long time is that for whatever reason, people love the really sensational, outlandish stuff, and they'll jump on that. And they'll ignore or find boring or trivial the really hardcore solid stuff, right? Like Epstein is like 100% solid, totally, you know, nailed. I mean, I've been reading Whitney Webb's book. It's excellent, particularly the part two about Epstein. I mean, it's all right there. And, oh, but let's talk about, you know, Q crap. Oh, let's talk about, you know, this really outlandish stuff that you can't actually prove, but it makes for some kind of, you know, I mean, this is the whole idea, I guess, behind tabloids. You know, people just love that kind of crazy stuff. Yeah, Taylor Swift is Zena LaVey. I mean, that's just, Jamie was pointing that out. I've always thought that was so stupid. Oh, look, Katy Perry is the grown-up version of JonBenet Ramsey. I mean, it's just so dumb. It's like,
yeah.
And all that does is really make everybody look silly. And I think that a lot of people genuinely believe dumb fake conspiracies, not because they're malicious, but also we have to keep in mind that fake conspiracies are very useful, and they've been used for a long time by intelligence agencies. I'm reading a book right now about the CIA's use of religion, and it's written by an academic guy, not a conspiracy text. It's called Errand into the Wilderness, the CIA and the History of Religion. And he's talking about various things that the CIA cooked up, one of which was a staged second coming. And they thought if they could pull this off, how useful this would be to convincing, say, Roman Catholics in countries in Latin and South America where there might be a tendency to believe in Sovietism or communism. Now, I'm not saying that makes Sovietism or communism good, but you can see that that doesn't make the CIA good because they want to pull off a fake second coming. And by the way, if they're willing to engage in a fake second coming, you better believe they're willing to engage in a fake and staged and fake and gray alien invasion, right? I mean, it's in the same deck of cards. So, you know, fake conspiracies, fake staged things. I'm not saying everything's fake, but these types of operations are definitely the playbook of the intelligence agencies. And they use, you know, what Cass Sunstein's famous paper, right, was about cognitive infiltration, which was to go into alternative media and conspiracy groups and the internet sphere and flood it with fake conspiracies. That was his whole famous paper that he wrote that got him the job of being one of Obama's czars, right?
Who
was this?
Who was that? Sorry, I didn't catch the name. Kraft
Sunstein wrote the famous paper on, it's called, it's a paper called, it's his paper on conspiracy theories and epistemology. And it posits the theory in there that if the government wanted to disrupt alternative media and conspiracy theories online, the best way to do that would be to go into it through what he called cognitive infiltration and just flood it with dumb fake conspiracies. So I think we have seen, you know, in the last 10 years or so since that paper came out, quite a few of those, right? I mean, in my opinion, I'm not into the flat earth stuff. I'm not into, I don't mind people questioning those things, but I think QAnon is another classic example. I mean, I called out QAnon day one. So for me, those are just examples of these kinds of fake conspiracies. And I'm not saying that Ryan Garcia is therefore an agent, but you can have kind of unstable people who really disseminate a lot of disinformation, even unwittingly, because they're just kind of loose cannons and unhinged. And I think you're totally right that there's a danger in those kinds of people basically neutralizing real questioning.
Yeah, and I'm not above that myself, because I know I study a lot of ideas of how to create content for social media, like the business side of things, right? And I will make a 1-minute video, and it's got to be short. It's got, because everyone's got ADHD or ADD or whatever now, and like you got to get their you got to hook them in 2 seconds, get their attention, say something sensational so people comment and fight in the comments. Like that's how you get videos to go viral, unfortunately. So I will employ some of those things to very briefly to the point. I'll just, like, for instance, I got in trouble because someone got mad at me because I said Thoth was an alien. And it's like, well, I mean, that's an oversimplification of it, but you know, it's not so far off base, right? Based on a bunch of different things. And people get mad and they get in the comments, but it works, right? It gets eyes on it. Like, and that's what Ryan Garcia could very well be doing is talking about these well-known conspiracy subjects that, you know, Alex Jones was down there in Bohemian Grove. What was that? 20 years ago, he did that. Yeah, I mean, we've known about it for a long time. So it is possible that this is just viral marketing. It's possible that he's got maybe, for lack of a better term, handlers that are saying, hey, we need to get this these pay-per-view numbers up. Here's one way you can do it.
Exactly.
Just do it. And it is an interesting time to be alive.
Bro, I think we saw that very same thing with the whole Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, that whole thing was a drama that tied into the Super Bowl and that helped get the ratings up. I think that's total. That was Sam Tripoli's analysis. And I totally agree with that.
Yeah. It is interesting. And I found that we in the late 2010s, around 2016 to 20, there was this period where conspiracy theorists were under attack and they censored us, shadow banned us.
Right.
And I still operate under that assumption because it does still happen. But I oftentimes wonder if lately that this stuff doesn't get actually more traction now. And these social media companies are more okay with spreading it, because I've found that some of my videos where I talk about these very, you know, dicey subjects, they'll still get tons of views. And I think, well, that's kind of weird. Like, I usually in the past, I would get warnings and it'd shut you down or whatever. So I do wonder if there's not, you know, you were saying about that cognitive infiltration. I'm gonna have to read that article, man, or that
you
essay.
You should read it. It's not probably not what you expect from like a government sort of. So he was writing this, I think, coming out of Harvard, and he's a law person. So he went from Harvard Law and wrote it's like an academic paper. It's 15, 20 pages. And it's actually about philosophy. It's not the kind of government, you know, operation kind of paper you expect. He admits, ironically, at the beginning of the paper that there have been real government conspiracies, and JFK is one example. So he admits and concedes some ground at the beginning of the paper. And then he talks about how epistemology and philosophy, which is just our theory of knowledge, how that works, and then goes on to say that, you know, the way the government should really combat these things is through flooding the market with fake conspiracy. So that's just a classic, you know, paper. And Sunstein went from being Obama's czar of something to then going to work at the NSA. So this is, you know, this is a legit serious person in the establishment. And, you know, there's all been famous examples of parallel fake conspiracies, like Operation not Torch, but the one that was like the earlier version of QAnon back at the time of where the Bolsheviks came up with an idea to ferret out all of the people that supported the czar by coming up with a fake white hats within the system league that you could join. And then when all the people who opposed the Bolsheviks joined, the Bolsheviks were actually running this. And they knew then who all of the counter-revolutionaries were. So it allowed them then to purge those people. And that's kind of a model for this, you know, these fake ideas of like, oh, there's secret heroes within the system and they're going to save us. And if you just, you know, sign on to this, you know, get your boomer decoder ring and see what the Q drop is this week and look at the color. Donald Trump's tie, one of its red ties. Unbelievable. Gonna be insane when I wear red ties. Okay. I've got to work on my Trump. It's not Shane Gillis level. Obviously, he's like the master, but dude, I'm gonna get it. Anyway, I mean, just the silliness of like, oh, Trump wore red ties. He's speaking to us boomers and just nonsense, right? But yeah, it's real. It's actually modeled on older. Do you remember Nocera? Are you familiar with that?
No,
I know you didn't want to talk about all this kind of crap today, but it just got.
No, I know you. I know you're like the king of this kind of stuff, man.
Well, Nocera is was this thing back in like the late '90s and early 2000s, and I forget what it stands for, but it was like this. There's patriots in the government, and it was like it started at the time of Clinton era, and the idea was that the white hats in the government are going to arrest Bill Clinton at any moment.
Oh,
and
really?
All of these idiot, militia patriotard crowd fell for this back in the day because it went out in a lot of newsletters and they were believing in this, and it was all just BS. So if you, the acronym is NESARA, and actually, believe it or not, some of the people involved in NESARA then jumped onto the Q crap at the time of QAnon, and they continue to ride this nonsense. It's just a bunch of silliness, but yeah, I mean, and there's other examples. Mirage Men. I mean, Mirage Men is the same type of stuff applied to the sphere of the so-called alien disseminators and chosen people to disclosure, basically.
Do you know if Bill Cooper, who's one of my red pill daddies, was he maybe associated with that NESARA in any way? Do you know? I don't know. That's an obscure
not that question. I know of. Actually, he would be he's typically more conspiratorial, so he probably would, I don't recall, but he probably would have been saying, oh, this is a scam, don't fall for it. You know, I never did really follow Cooper that closely. I read Pale Horse back in the day. Yeah. I know it had some interesting information. And then I think Cooper had a position initially where he thought Jesus was a hologram of the aliens. And then I think he backtracked that position and said, that was dumb, I shouldn't have believed that. So I've never really had a strong opinion on Cooper either way. But my inclination is that he probably would have rejected NESARA as a scam.
You ever talk to Alex Jones about Bill Cooper? Does he have an opinion on? Because I know Cooper was him and Alex Jones had. I don't know. I've heard videos of Cooper trying to say like Alex Jones was whatever. I don't know. He yeah, didn't agree with him. You know what I mean?
Alex has addressed it, but I don't remember the last time he addressed like what he said exactly. Honestly,
okay. Just curious. I don't want to see any of our conspiracy daddies and brothers.
I can tell you that he's not Bill Hicks. I can tell you that.
Confirmed. Okay. All right. I know I'm keeping you later already, but I want to talk to you about this show in Los Angeles, Friday, March 15th, Hollywood Conspiracy and Comedy. Jamie Kennedy, Jay Dyer, Jamie Hanshaw. What are you guys going to talk about for 5 hours, please?
Well, this is a damn fine cup of Joe. I can tell you that.
So when I did the last time we were in LA, I opened up with like 20 minutes of impressions, right? So I went through about 40 different impressions. That's the one nobody could guess who it was. And I'm like, I'm in LA and nobody knows a David Lynch impression when they hear it.
That's Gordon Cole, isn't it?
You would think, right? Yeah. So basically we have a lot of fun at our live events. We had so much fun last time. I was really nervous about it. I didn't know if it would come together. Jamie, he showed up right before his stand-up, so I was like, is he coming?
Right? Oh, wow.
So I was a little nervous, sweating a little bit, but he came, he killed it. He was really funny. Everybody loved his set, and he's actually really good at kind of improv and kind of making it fit the setting. So he doesn't just do like a prepackaged, you know, like, oh, here's the 20-year-old Jamie Kennedy routine. Like, he actually, you know, makes it fit the setting that he's in. So I did a lot of impressions, and then Jamie, my wife, gave her talk. She did an awesome hour and a half on occult Hollywood and symbolism. This time she's updating it, doing new material. She's doing a whole new talk on Hollywood and witchcraft. So we're going to go deep into Wicca, the history of witchcraft, all that. Then I do a talk. Last time I did a talk on philosophy. This time I'm updating it to deal more so with hardcore geopolitical, dark, demonic conspiracy stuff like Epstein, blackmail, how that all goes down, how that ties into the spiritual side of stuff. Recent information even that's come out with, I don't know if you've seen all the Diddy drama.
Oh, yeah.
Cat Williams.
Listen, Isaac, we got to talk about a lot of stuff right now, okay? There's a lot of people out here that ain't listening to Cat Williams, but I've been saying it for 15 years, okay?
I don't know if you saw the Rogan. You probably did.
Yeah, I've seen. You did a breakdown. Yeah, I did a breakdown on the Rogan episode.
I haven't listened to it yet, but
as well as the yeah.
I mean, that was pretty big. We did, I think, 3 podcasts breaking down the history of like gangster rap and CIA, breaking down all the stuff Cat Williams talked about. So we'll be talking about some of that. And from an academic perspective, I'm going to be going through a lot of the books. And then Jamie Kennedy headlines with 15-20 minute stand-up set. Everybody gets to get their book signed, get to meet Jamie. He signs everybody's Scream DVDs and their, you know, all that. So it's a lot of fun. It's a 5-hour event and it's more like a party. Like, people come and our live events are lit.
That's cool, man. Is there So you talked about Diddy for a second there. Are you going to talk about, are you talking about like the, because there's conspiracies about Diddy being sort of Raps Epstein? Exactly. Have you dug into that? Oh, okay.
That's the weird thing. Is like, so Tristan and I did a podcast two, three weeks ago on a lot of what Cat Williams is saying. We went deep into the Shay Shay interview. The Joe Rogan event hadn't happened yet. So I was going pretty deep into the background of Diddy, which, I mean, I listened to Puff Daddy when I was in high school and, you know, but I didn't go into his arcana of the stories about him. I just didn't know about that. So I dug pretty deep into that. And what's funny is that in that podcast, I was like, he's like the Epstein of rap, dude.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Boom.
Here's that. Yeah. Yeah, so that was just my intuition, but it turns out that that seems to look like that might be the case. Allegedly.
So there's a lot of stuff in there. I've been sort of tracking it, and I did a show on Diddy back in December. Now there's all these new allegations with,
You were ahead of me on that.
That was back right after Cassie accused him of a bunch of stuff. There was a bunch of different accusers, and now he's in trouble because this other rapper, some guy I never heard of, I forget his name already, Lil Rod or something, was accusing him of a bunch of stuff, and he calls out names. And there's a rabbit hole of Jay-Z connected in here because Jay-Z and Diddy were besties, and Diddy said that only two people are allowed to call him Sean, his mother and Jay-Z. Like, that's how close they are. And there's a lot of stuff about how Jay-Z's threatened to be exposed of a lot of dark dealings, apparently, and all this. But I don't know. I haven't dug deep into the newest, but there's a lot there. And the Epstein connection is, it all starts to make sense. And you're like, oh, Diddy's been connected with literally everything that's huge in hip hop. You wouldn't think so because he's kind of younger. People probably don't even know who he is. Right. But he's behind all the stuff, Tupac, Big, everything. And
yeah, it ties into the history of Death Row and all that. And that there's a great chapter. My publisher has a book by John Potash called Drugs Weapon as a Weapons Weapon Against Us. And there's a whole chapter on Tupac, Biggie, and Death Row. And it's not immediately talking about Diddy, but if you read that chapter, you'll notice a lot of parallels to what's going on. And I think it does tie in. So you're absolutely right to draw that conclusion, I think. So, I mean, that's not the focus of my talk. It's just new stuff that's kind of emerged that, you know, will be in this talk, tying it into kind of big level geopolitical stuff and how they control not just Hollywood, but as you know, the music industry as well. So, you know, we touched on Hollywood a lot. So I want to kind of bring in a lot more of the music industry as well, which I haven't really gone too deep into in the last few years. So it's going to be a fun event, March 15th, there in Hollywood, LA area. So yeah, get your tickets over on Eventbrite. It's linked on my Twitter, on my YouTube community tab, on my website. You'll see it everywhere there to get the tickets.
And I'm going to put the link in the show notes of where the listeners can grab those tickets while supplies last, of course. And, you know, I wish I could be there for this. I need to get back out to LA because every now and then I'll try to get out there maybe once a year and try to schedule something with Tinfoil Hat, you know, which I actually heard John Potash on, I think it was on Tinfoil Hat years ago. And it's been a fascinating show. Yeah. But anyways, I know I've kept you late, man. Thank you for jamming out with me for a little bit here. And I want all the listeners, you got to get out there, man. 5 hour show. Are you kidding me? This is going to be great. So I'll put the link in the show notes. It's called Hollywood Conspiracy and Comedy. Jamie Kennedy, Jay Dyer, Jamie Hanshaw. Go get the tickets. All right. And any last places that you want them to go or to find you or to connect with you or Jamie or any of this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, we're on, you can find Jamie's podcast. She does podcasts as well over on YouTube. She's growing over there. She's on Rockfin. I'm on Rockfin. You can always find us there. You can find me on Twitter, Jay Dyer, Instagram, Jay's Analysis. And then every Friday, fourth hour of Lord Voldemort.
You still got to use that term, huh?
Well, I do because I don't know where this is going out, just to be safe. Good.
So. That is a safe term. Okay. All right. I'll let you go. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate
it. Thank you so much, Isaac.
There you go. I had to hurry up. Jay Dyer is a busy man over there on InfoWars and such. I only had so much time to get with him, so I had to hurry up and get through it. But man, I feel like we could have unpacked that stuff for another 3 hours, which is exactly what he's going to do Friday, March 15th for 5 hours. Jay Dyer, Jamie Kennedy, yes, Jamie Kennedy from Scream, the famous actor, and comedian Jamie Hanshaw, who covers a lot of my occult concepts that we talk about here. She does it too. She's got a YouTube. In fact, I did her show. We're supposed to link up again and do another one. But you can get tickets to catch it live. 5-hour show. It's going to be epic. Friday, March 15th in Los Angeles. Hollywood Conspiracy and Comedy. Get your tickets on Eventbrite. I linked it in the show notes. If you can't find it there for some reason, you can go to all of Jay's social medias or jaysanalysis.com and you can link to it there. But don't miss out on that opportunity. And like I said, I'll put links to a lot of our past shows we've done. You're going to find, if you listen to the old ones, how prophetic a lot of the conversations we had had on what's happening in our world today. So thank you for listening. Thanks to Jay and Jamie for keeping me in their world of big moves, not leaving me in the dust. But I appreciate them getting on the show, and I appreciate Jay taking his time with us. So, check out JL everywhere. Get those tickets. Till next time, stay positive.